like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. Whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Grey Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Welcome to Witch Police Radio. I'm here with a guest who is new to the show. One of the things that's fun about the show is that, you know, because I'm choosing the guests and I'm sort of deciding who gets to be on the show, the whole Winnipeg thing, I can play fast and loose with the rules about, you know, who qualifies as a local artist. And so, as I've done oftentimes in the past, if there's someone with a strong connection to this city or this province who happens to be living and playing music elsewhere, I think that that fits. I think there's the whole Manitoba adjacent thing, which, you know, a lot of people fall into that category. And I think the guest on this episode very much fits into that sort of area. So I think the best way to start this off, as I always do, is for the guest to introduce himself, give a bit of background about what you do as an artist, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sam. My name is Kevin McKay. I grew up in Winnipeg in St. Boniface. That's where I cut my teeth musically and played in a bunch of different outfits there. All sorts of different styles of music, and graduated high school and made my way to Toronto to pursue music here.
And so, you know, this is a terrible way to start an interview because everyone hates this question, but what is the best way to define the type of music you play? Because, I mean, you know, I was listening to it before we did this conversation, and I have some ideas, but we're in an era now where everything has so many subgenres of subgenres and offshoots and this and that. No one has like a distinct way to sort of define music the way we used to, right? Everything has got its own weird little unique idiosyncrasies. So what do you call it? I mean, if someone hears that you're a musician and they want to know sort of the basics about what you do, how do you define that?
Well, it's been called everything from shoegaze to atmospheric to dream pop. Basically, I write the songs on the acoustic guitar, and then I realize them in the studio, adding tons of textures of guitar layers, keyboards, and realize them that way. So it's a very atmospheric kind of shoegaze roots, but very melodic kind of pop songs as well.
Okay. And that makes sense, you know, as a listener to your stuff, or, you know, as, like I said earlier, and when we first started talking about this, that does fit. I mean, the pop thing for sure, but yeah, that sort of atmospheric vibe is definitely present there. You mentioned right off the top that you had played in a number of projects here in Winnipeg, you know, when you were younger, when you were coming up. Where might people recognize you from? I'm assuming that most listeners here are from Winnipeg. It tends to be the case because of the subject matter. So where might people know your name or know you're playing?
Well, I grew up I went to school in St. Boniface. So my first musical experiences were at the French Cultural Center in St. Boniface. So there I played everything from French pop music to jazz, to classical music, started playing my first original music there. And then from there, it kind of grew into the downtown, the Spectrum at the time, the West End Cultural Center, the Royal Albert, those kind of places, and doing more of, back then it would have been the grunge scene. So dipping my toe into that. Yeah, so I've played with all sorts of Winnipeg artists. Initially, when I was a kid, I was in high school, and there were people would probably know Gilles Fournier and a woman called Michelle Grégoire, who suggested that I play with a local singer called Cecile Brown, downtown Cecile Brown. And that was my first kind of professional experience of playing in the bars and that with adults. And that kind of got the ball rolling.
Cool. And then how long have you been in Toronto now?
Well, I moved here in 95. I left Winnipeg. And I went up to the, I was here for quite a few years, a few decades. And then I went up to the Arctic to live there for a while. And then I made my way back to Winnipeg for a couple of years before coming back to Toronto, which is where I am presently.
Okay. Okay. I mean, that's a strange journey to go to just the Arctic and then back to Winnipeg and back to Toronto. What, I guess, I mean, you know, what was your sort of take, on the Toronto music scene after coming from Winnipeg? Because I mean, Winnipeg, you know, we're a big city for this part of the country, but compared to Toronto, it's a totally different, just population size and the amount of venues and bands and things like that. I mean, we punch above our weight, I think, in terms of the number of musicians here, but I mean, that's just such a much bigger city. What was that experience like? You dipping your toes into that music scene?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've always said Winnipeg is a great place to be from. The music scene that I experienced until the age of 18 set me up for, you know, the world stage, if you will. It was incredible growing up in Winnipeg. And the band, I moved to Toronto with a band, actually. So I moved with my brother, with a French singer called Dominique Reynolds, who is still making music in Winnipeg, and a drummer from St. Boniface, Dan Levac. So we moved as a band.
Okay.
Into the heart of Regent Park in Toronto. So for anyone who knows Regent Park, it's kind of the ghetto here. So going from St. Boniface to Regent Park was quite the eye-opener. But to answer your question, as far as music was concerned, this is, like I said, it was a time of alternative music. So it wasn't that different. You know, we, being in Winnipeg, we experienced everything on the national stage, you know, international. Like I said, things were coming out of Seattle at the time.
Yeah.
It was just really, at the time, an extension of that. So that particular band was doing that kind of thing. And then shortly, maybe a year or two after I moved here, members of that group came back to Winnipeg, and I joined another group called Vibrolux.
Okay.
And found a bit of success with them, and they were more of Manchester, kind of more a Britpop kind of feel. So that was something different that didn't necessarily make its way to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
A lot of those bands would only kind of come over, like, and then you have the whole shoegazer aspect and the Madchester scene at the time. They wouldn't necessarily go to all of North America. They would kind of come to just Toronto or New York or the East Coast. So that was something new that I experienced after moving here.
Yeah, and I guess that's still sort of the issue with a lot of bands too, is the North American tour will include Toronto and maybe Montreal or Vancouver, and that's sort of the whole rest of the country gets left out. But I guess the benefit to being there is that you have access to not only Toronto being a major destination for a lot of bands, but like you said, all those other East Coast cities that are, you know, relatively nearby, and then you can sort of get to see a lot of people that would just never come here.
Yeah, and seeing bands early as well, you know, like in the clubs.
Yeah.
Like I remember seeing Interpol at the Horseshoe, you know, I don't know if it was their first Toronto show or what, but a lot of bands like that, when you come over for the first time and no one really knows them, we have the luxury of discovering them for the first time.
Yeah, yeah, that would be cool. I mean, it happens here to a certain extent, but not anywhere near, obviously, the same as out there.
Different tone. Gotta see. thinking, feeling, I'm here before. I've been rich and I've been full, but I'm still searching for something more.
So what, I mean, I know this is, we're kind of compressing a lot of time here, in terms of like the, you know, the longer timeline, but when did you end up doing what you're doing now as far as the solo project, which is, you know, like you said at the beginning, very shoegaze influenced and this atmospheric kind of vibe with also those pop elements?
Yeah. So I was actually fronting a band for a few years, with my drummer and, or with my brother, and it was kind of a Britpop thing as well. And that was kind of my first foray into being a singer-songwriter. I'd just been a guitar player at that point.
Yeah.
And singing, writing my own songs. So I had a bit of experience fronting a group for quite a number of years here in Toronto. And was part of the developing shoegaze scene. I was playing drums in a band called Fjord Rowboat.
Okay.
And we put out a few records. And... and then things just kind of changed, and I realized I wanted to continue doing my thing. I had a bunch of songs, and I didn't put a band together. I just decided to do it on my own. I have a good friend, Derek Downham, who I've known for years. He's played in my musical projects. I've played in his groups. He's a multi-instrumentalist, and he had just started his studio. And I had the opportunity, this is right after COVID, or maybe during COVID, and to start getting some songs together. So cool. He and I just put our heads together and realized this project.
Cool, cool. And I mean, the timing on what we're doing this interview now is because you have a single that recently came out. And obviously, we can talk about that in a minute in more detail. But what... I mean, have you released some records solo now? Like, is this, now that you said, you know, COVID was kind of the period when this got really started in earnest. Have you been putting out a lot of music, or is this sort of just now coming to fruition?
This is the first one. Well, this is the first one for just me.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I said, so Derek, my producer, and I share the duties of the instruments and all that. I started releasing music in the spring. I had a bit of a hiccup. I don't know if I should get into this or not, but I had my music pulled from all the streaming sites. There's a Scottish DJ by the same name as me who sent a cease and desist that we didn't really take seriously because we didn't think that was a thing because it's my name. And, you know, I've been, you know, this is my first solo endeavor, but I've been on records playing different instruments for decades now with my name. And anyway, he succeeded in having the music pulled, hence the different spelling of my last name. So we had to kind of start over. We were just getting some momentum in the spring and then had a couple singles out, and that happened, and we had to kind of regroup, and this is what we came up with. So now we're back and up and running. So everything's fine now, but it was just a bit of a hiccup.
That's such a crazy thing to happen too, because you hear about that happening with band names, but this is like your actual birth name, right? I mean, it's bizarre that, but I mean, I guess if his name is the same, that would sort of make sense. But yeah, I don't think...
Not like, really.
Have you listened to his music? Like, is there any chance anyone would mistake it for yours?
He's a DJ. He's not a musician. He's a DJ.
Right, right.
And I have total respect for DJs. But to do a cease and desist on a singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, as opposed to someone who's a DJ, it's clearly a different medium. But, it is what it is.
So you've changed the spelling, which is almost more like in line with the pronunciation of your last name.
Yeah, pretty much.
And obviously getting the songs pulled is going to be, like you said, a hiccup. But have you had to do, like, what else have you had to do to sort of reintroduce yourself? I mean, people obviously who know you and know your music and have seen your past bands and all of that, they know who you are. They're probably not too fazed by the name change. But, I mean, you obviously started building some momentum and then this kind of sucked the air out of the room. Was it just a matter of re-uploading the songs under the new name, or did you have to do a lot more sort of getting the word out about the fact that you were you under this new spelling?
Well, it's all pretty grassroots. It's been grassroots. I don't have a label supporting me, so it's totally independent. So I just started doing it on my own, basically on social media. And it's one of those things, you know, people accept it pretty quickly. I'm obviously proud of my name. And I would have loved to have kept my real name, but it's fine. I'm over it now. The important thing for me is I just want to get the music out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole thing with releasing music is I just want people to hear it and in hopes that few people like it.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. It's that simple. You know, there's no huge goal other than that, you know, and just hopefully, you know, a few people like it enough to listen to it again and it resonates with them.
I remember the days we were innocent and brave. We didn't know what we could lose. Nothing needed to be said with our boots on in bed. It was over satisfaction too soon. So hold me up, guide me home by the light of the moon. Hold me up, guide me home by the light of the moon. We were high behind noon, dancing to an ancient tune. Where the sun crawled to my room, hit me right in the head, skinned my bones till I bled. Fought the black knight trying to get back to you. Hold me up, guide me home by the light of the moon. Hold me up, guide me home by the light of the moon. Thank you.
Well, I guess the natural question after that is what has the reception been so far? I mean, you know, you've been sort of newly doing this again under this name. I mean, regardless of the name thing, what's the response been to your music? Because as you've sort of described here, most of your past experience was in bands. You were the guitar player. You were playing drums. You were not necessarily sort of the focal point of this, right? Now you are. You're doing the singer-songwriter thing. What kind of response have you had from listeners?
It's been very positive, thankfully. And yeah, no, people have resonated with a lot of different songs. It feels like it's been a long time coming. Kind of things have been building towards this. You know, I'm in a position now where, you know, I've worn a lot of different hats over the years. And when I do something, I take it seriously. So mostly I was diving into being a guitar player. So studying, you know, playing all the different types of music, taking that really seriously. For a while, it was drumming.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I really dove into that. And the latest thing is just songwriting. That's my main thing, is how to be a better songwriter. And I should say, I've been writing songs for years with a good friend of mine, a poet here in Toronto, named Terry O'Flaherty.
Okay.
Who we write the lyrics together. And so I've been going to his poetry night for years and years now. So that's been a great vehicle for introducing new songs. It's once a month, so I'm always pushing myself to at least come up with one new song. They've been gracious enough to allow me to sing songs. You know, it's all poets.
But, yeah.
But it's been great. So yeah. To answer your question in the, you know, a roundabout way, it's been a very good reaction, and I'm very happy. I'm very happy with the way the record sounds. Like I said, the producer, Derek Downham, did a great job. Everything is sitting where we wanted it to. So, cool. Yeah, and I'm very happy.
One of the things about this show is, you know, I talk to a pretty wide range of artists of different genres and different sort of levels of success and different ages and everything. And it seems like that in 2025, the way people release music is completely different from person to person. Someone who put out physical records, and some people would just do streaming. Some people do Bandcamp only. I mean, there's so many different options now. There's not sort of like a unified way to put music out. So what has your experience been sort of, because you have been in bands that have put out records before, and now we're in this weird streaming era and stuff, and I know your single is out on various platforms right now. What has that experience been for you of just sort of the way that music is not only consumed but released into the world? Like, I mean, it's sort of a different mentality than it would have been even 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, at first, it was very strange. When I released the first single, it was like, that's it. Like, there's no hard copy.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, I'd love to have vinyl. And hopefully that's in the works, but I don't have it right now. But as far as accessibility is concerned, it's wild. It's, you know, I've met people on the subway here, and we get to chatting, and within seconds, they're listening to my music.
Yeah.
I was in an Uber last week, and I got chatting with the driver, and again within a minute he pulled me up and he's listened to, you know, and that kind of accessibility just is just so new. It's amazing, you know. The only drag is to have not as many people listen to it on either proper speakers or headphones. A lot of people do just listen on the phones.
For sure.
And when you spend a lot of time mixing and mastering, and you know, you're panning parts here and there, and things are coming in and out, it's not ideal, but here we are, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting too, because I mean, you're playing a style of music too that, I mean, when you're doing atmospheric stuff and that kind of rewards that sort of listening, right? Where people are hearing what you've done, what's been done on the production side, as well as the performance side. And
yeah.
So how do you adjust for that at all? Like, do you go into the song, into the recording process, knowing that, you know, 80% of people are going to just listen to some shitty phone speakers? Or does that matter? Like, are you making it for the headphone audience?
Well, that comes in the mastering process, which we had somebody do that.
Okay.
And, she was amazing. She works at a Lacquer Channel, Mariana. And I think they take that into account.
They must, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think we did that also in the mixing process. It's just making sure that the vocals, you know, pop out. You know, it is kind of in the shoegazer style, but when we first started mixing it, we realized we didn't want to bury the vocals too much, like they often do in
sure.
that style. Although I love buried vocals, you know, but there's a bit more to be said. It's funny because we, you know, you get a mix and you send it to your friends. And I mean, the majority of my friends are musicians and that. And sent it to my parents.
Yeah.
And my mom responded, I can't understand the lyrics. So my friend Derek, who did the record with me, sent me a mix. And he, in the email subject matter, it said, Mom mix. And he boosted the vocals. And it was like, yeah, we realized that, you know, it worked better if you could hear and understand the words.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's pretty funny, actually. So I guess, like, what's the plan going forward with this project? I mean, like you've said, you know, this is an independent thing. It's very DIY. It sounds like the two of you are pretty, like, heavily involved in all aspects of making this. What do you hope to achieve with this? I mean, are you cool with sort of where you are at the moment, where you're able to release this online? Like you said, people are hearing it in Ubers and on the subway, and you know they can access it really easily. Or do you hope for something sort of larger to come out of this as a solo artist now?
Well, I mean, yeah, reaching as many people as possible is the goal, you know. So whether that comes with placement in television, film, things like that.
Yeah.
That's always a nice route to take. So that's something that we're exploring as well. Yeah, you know, it's funny because I haven't put a band together, and I play live with other projects and things. I've got a friend of mine that I'm playing guitar in his band. That's a live thing. So I get those kicks out. I do play acoustic shows with the stuff. So it's kind of full circle. You know, I write the song in the acoustic, I realize it, bring this big production to it. And then when I do live shows, I strip it right back down to the acoustic. You know, I'll sometimes have a violinist play with me,
cool.
or different instruments or stuff like that. But no, I just really... I'm enjoying putting the music out and having people listen to it as we intended when we recorded it.
And I guess that maybe is a good segue into where people hear this. I mean, again, the way people listen to music is so different from person to person, but I'm sure there's a central hub or somewhere they can go if they want to find this on whatever platform they use.
Yeah, so it's wherever they would stream music, essentially. We set up a YouTube channel where you can listen there. I didn't realize, again, like the things you learn, right? I have friends who are a bit younger who told me that they exclusively listen to music on YouTube.
Yeah, that's a thing now. It's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I'm on there, Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, things like that.
And then you're in Toronto, this is a Winnipeg show. Obviously, people from everywhere are listening to this. It's not just locals. You're probably not playing shows in Winnipeg anytime soon, I would imagine. But if someone wants to find out what you're doing as far as live things or upcoming releases, I mean, it's a podcast. Someone could hear it the day it comes out, or they could hear it a year from now. Maybe things have changed since then. What's the best way to sort of follow you and find out what you're up to?
On Instagram or Facebook under Kevin Mackay, MKAI.
Yeah, and I'll link to that in the show notes too, for sure.
Perfect. Yeah, so all the shows go up there, everything that I'm up to, the new singles, things like that. I do get back to Winnipeg, and I sometimes play shows there. I have friends who if they know that I'm going to be in town, they'll ask me to play with them.
Cool.
Some of the friends that have been on your show, actually.
Oh, right on. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, you had Brendan from Super Duty Tough Work and a few other people. And yeah, I played with Brendan for a few years.
That's awesome.
Great,
yeah.
Great group.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So do you have anything planned? I mean, we're recording this. It's December. By the time it comes out, it'll be even later into December. We're basically at the end of the year. Do you have any big plans happening in the new year for this project, or are you just sort of continuing to release stuff as you get it completed?
Yeah. So, yeah, I decided to. Turns out that some people are choosing to release a song at a time. So that's what I've been doing, but once a month kind of thing. So
yeah.
I've got a whole record. So I'm on to, as you were mentioning, I'm on to the fourth single now. So I've got another 6-7 songs to go. So as I release those songs one at a time, I've got a whack of songs. I'm already into pre-production for the next record.
Oh, cool.
That I'm going to do with the same person I did the first record with, Derek Downham. Yeah.
When do you expect that this current record will be fully released? Like how often are the songs coming out?
They're coming out about once a month.
Once a month.
So by spring, I think that should be all of them.
Cool. And then the new record, I mean, this is something I like to ask people, because a lot of people are in that situation where they're still releasing something, or they've just released something, but there's already, the follow-up is already, it's underway. It's going on. Do you feel like the sound has changed measurably sort of from record to record? Like, are these songs that have come out over the past few months, did they feel old to you? And have you changed sort of stylistically enough?
Yeah, they do feel old. I mean, that's always the case, right? You know, by the time I've been in groups where by the time the record came out, I couldn't even listen to the record just because of the mixing process and all the recording and all that. And I'd have to sit on the record for sometimes 6 months to a year before I could actually enjoy it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I learned some things on this record, things that I liked, things that, not that I disliked, but other directions that I like to go in. So the next record will definitely be a step in a similar direction, but I think it's going to be stronger. Like I learned what I really liked about the last record, and I think we're just going to amplify that and improve upon that.
Right on.
Swept away. realize it's all there. You come around.